John Deck, our own White House correspondent, keeping a close eye on this. Good morning, sir. How are you, John?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jack. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, what do you think?
Well, it's a great opportunity for President Biden. The largest audience that he will likely have during his campaign will be tonight, nationally televised, primetime address, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And the White House and the campaign well aware of the fact that this is a great opportunity for Joe Biden to essentially reset his campaign to unify Democrats, to reach out to independents, and to essentially have a jump start to the campaign. And he definitely needs a jump start, given the fact that we've seen poll after poll which shows him trailing by a very small margin, sometimes within the margin of error, Donald Trump.
Yeah, you know, and I sense that, you know, the way they're going into this, spending all day preparing, you know, really putting his best face and appearance or ability forward, I imagine, you know, what do you think will be about 50 minutes, if you had to say, maybe a little less?
Well, you have to keep in mind that, you know, the speech is timed out and the president's been practicing it at Camp David. So they time it out, but then you have to also factor in all the applause lines that take place. And that sometimes lengthens the speech out a bit. The speech will likely get underway by President Biden around 9:07 p.m. I would not be surprised if it lasts until about 10:15 or so p.m. So a little longer than an hour is what I'm expecting. But, you know, longer isn't always better. You know, I think that sometimes having a concise speech, especially for someone who's not a great orator like Joe Biden, would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, interesting. I remember the one you were in, former President Bill Clinton. I think I woke up at around 11. He was still going. All right, thank you. Thank you, John.
That's right. Thanks so much.
All right. Hey, interested in becoming a New Hampshire State Trooper? Even curious about it? Hey, there's a brand new, super easy, user-friendly website. And Sergeant Kopko of the New Hampshire State Police talking about a test coming up that Trooper Nicole Stone referenced the other day in our New Hampshire State Police segment, brought to you Thursday mornings by Auto Fair. Good morning, Sergeant.
Good morning. Thanks for having me again. How you been?
Good, sir. Thank you. I haven't gone to the site to check out how easy or easier it is, but tell us about the test, what you want people to know about it. Some people may be, unless they've really been focusing on this, I know it's not an easy decision to just, hey, do I want to become a police officer or a state trooper or a firefighter? There's a process, but talk about the test and what you want people to know, Sergeant.
Yeah, certainly. Our test is right around the corner, March 23rd. We're taking applications all the way till March 18th. And, yeah, we do have a new and improved website. It's pretty simple, joinstatepolice.nh.gov. And the application link is right at the top in a yellow banner. Just got to be 21 years old with at least 60 college credit hours to apply. But if you have no college experience, but you have a high school diploma with 2 years of full-time military service or at a law enforcement service at another agency, all three avenues will make you eligible to apply. And as always, Trooper Stone and myself are always willing to talk to anybody who may have any questions about if they're eligible or just about our hiring process.
What should people be thinking about that other than the commitment? What do they do to prepare, to get ready? What should they expect? Can you elaborate on some of that?
Absolutely. The first part, we give you the answers to. So it's the PT standards. So we do the 50th percentile of the Cooper standards, and all that is sit-ups, push-ups, and a mile-and-a-half run. All of our standards for different genders and different age groups are on our website as well. But that's the first part of it. We do have a written exam, and if you reach out to us, we can send you the study guide information for that. It's a seven-step process. Anyone who applies for the March 23rd test, the hire date will be in mid-June, and we'll send you to the July Police Academy if you're not certified yet.
And what's the timetable, Sergeant?
Yeah, March 23rd will be the initial test date, and then if you go through all the whole process by mid-June, June 14th, we'll hire you.
And what was your process, Sergeant? I know I've asked you before, but if you go back a little bit.
Yeah, so
what surprised you? What did not surprise you? What have you learned since, if you're doing it again? What are the thoughts process?
Yeah, just being willing to be open and transparent, because it's a lot. It is a long process, because we're trying to develop a trust and see if the applicant's a good fit and a good fit for us. I just remember I was in college at the time and came up. I went to school in Virginia, so I came and flew up for the first part of the process, and it took a little bit longer last time. I think my process was almost 8 months long, but we've been able to condense it to about a 3 to 4 month process now to make it more efficient.
Interesting. And what's your message to someone who's on the fence Because I know it's a tough thing to be on the fence about. I mean, I wouldn't become a utility worker or a medical professional if I really wasn't, you know, determined and made up my mind. So becoming a state trooper is obviously not a whimsical type career. Very meaningful, very noble, very important to help people. I just heard the other day, Sergeant, about one of your colleagues pulling a young woman out of a vehicle in a dangerous situation the other evening in an accident, you know, pretty much risking his life to save hers. You know, a lot of incredible good comes from this. So what's your, anyone who's sort of on the fence, what would you say to them?
Yeah, two things. Number one, just the opportunity that we have. You know, everybody starts out on the road, but you really are part of something bigger than yourself, and you have that greater sense of purpose each day putting the uniform on. But secondly, we are very open to talking to anybody and having open and honest conversations, whether in person, over the phone, through text, through email. We try and make ourselves very available to talk to people like that who are on the fence. But it is a really good career if it's something that you're looking for where, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint of a career, that's for sure. But if you want to get into something, doing something different every day, helping people out, and just feeling good about what you're doing out there for the community, for the state, it's really a fulfilling career, that's for sure.
And, you know, I'm not sure you caught it, Sergeant, but we had Trooper Nicole Stone on the other day with the CEO of Planet Fitness, Craig Hansen.
Yeah.
Talking about, because you've been involved, talking about offering, and we may not have a window now, or the window might be short between now and a few weeks, and I want you to conclude and remind people the website.
Absolutely.
This test coming up. But this idea for interested recruits that Nicole hears about, or you, to be able to go to a Planet Fitness in their community prior to going to the academy, prior to taking that physical test, which is part of this, once they take the written and all the interviews, to have better chances and confidence to pass those physical exams. So that's a pretty cool opportunity coming up, I think, as we try and partner and solve problems or challenges in the community. So that's coming up, and we'll have more on that in future tests. But real quickly, the website, if people want to sign up for this test, the who, what, when, where?
Absolutely. So the exam date is March 23rd, coming up in a couple weeks. March 18th is the deadline. And then to apply, just go to joinstatepolice.nh.gov. And feel free to call myself or Trooper Stone. You can reach us at 603-223-3866. We'd be happy to set up an appointment to meet in person, meet on the phone, text back and forth, email. We're open to anything to try and answer those questions ahead of time. Because like you said, it's confidence is what it comes down to, the fear of the unknown, kind of. So we'd like to set applicants' minds at ease before they take that jump.
All right, Sergeant. Thanks for your service. Good luck with this test.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lucas, all right. Senator Shaheen was on earlier, State of the Union preview, but also some interesting stuff at the State House under the dome. Today, Senate President Bradley on yesterday promoting passage of this bill that would basically do away with sanctuary city policies here in the Granite State. That's just one measure in the Senate today. Busy day in the State House. What's going on? What do you think of that one, by the way?
No, I mean, that seems like election year politics. I mean, the second year of a legislative session leading into an election year is not always going to be the most productive time for legislation. I think folks are seeing that as we get closer to crossover, which is when each chamber switches the bills that they have passed, and it kind of shows you where momentum is at. I mean, I still think, and we keep coming back to it, legal cannabis, I think, is probably one of the more substantial pieces of legislation that would change the state or have a big impact on the positive side of things that's moving its way through. But I think some of the bigger news out of the State House this week is now that we have a clear sense of the presidential race, how that trickles down into the governor's race, which then trickles down into the state legislative races. You had Kelly Ayotte begrudgingly endorse Donald Trump yesterday, which drew much criticism from both Chuck Morse, her Republican opponent, and Democrats. Republicans saying, hey, you weren't with him in 16, in 20, but now you're with him now, you're flip-flopping. And Democrats are saying the opposite. The same thing, that you were you flip-flopped on him before, will you flip-flop on him again? I think this is going to be a tremendous problem for Kelly Ayotte between now and September when the primary happens. You had primary polling from the AP in the state showing that a third of Republican voters are not comfortable with voting for Donald Trump. How Chuck Morse continues to push to the right and then impact on Kelly Ayotte I think this is going to be a very big dynamic now that the race is set on the presidential level. And even what does Chris Sununu do? How does his rhetoric impact these races? So I think the legislative session will, you know, hopefully some of the pretty insidious attacks on LGBTQ folks will subside, and people will remember that this is the live free or die state. And hopefully we pass something that makes sense for legal cannabis, but I am not optimistic based off what I'm seeing from legislative leaders.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Chuck Morris was on yesterday, and you know right about our primary before he endorsed Trump at an event, and you can see the clear strategy if you're Chuck Morris. You're known in the state house. You ran for U.S. Senate, but your former Senate president, Kelly Ayotte, is outraising you on funding. But you've seen Donald Trump's success in New Hampshire's Republican primary and all these primaries. If you got him to weigh in with an endorsement, and hypothetically, if Governor Chris Sununu ever endorsed Kelly Ayotte, for example, it might entice Trump to weigh in and try and deliver for, I'm not saying an underdog, but Morse. So it is interesting. It is interesting, this dynamic, because like it or not, Trump is kind of the dominant factor in Republican primaries, including New Hampshire.
I mean, he is the standard bearer for the Republican Party. So every time, and this is, you know, we have, I think, delightfully avoided having to hear about the horrible things or the controversial thing or the inciting, like, rhetoric that Donald Trump we would be confronted with every day when he was president. That is going to come back around again. And I mean, the Biden campaign is going to make sure that Nikki Haley voters are reminded of that. And, you know, we might look back at the last 2 months and realize that maybe Nikki Haley is the reason that Joe Biden wins re-election, because of the swath of dissatisfied, disgusted Republicans who will not vote for Donald Trump are now either going to stay home or vote for Joe Biden. How does that matriculate down into the governor's race? New Hampshire, you know, one of the only two open seats, and the North Carolina nominee who made it through their primary is very, very far right. So you got to imagine, you know, the Democratic Governors Association and folks are licking their chops about the prospects of retaking the corner office in New Hampshire, and Donald Trump giving us a big boost to do that.
All right. Thank you very much, Lucas Meyer. Best way to contact you?
Lucas S. Meyer on Twitter or catalystadvocacy.com. Thanks, Jack.
Manchester Mayor Jay Rouet recently elected to that position. And a story caught my eye, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for joining us. Good morning, New Hampshire. With all the national stuff, the state stuff going on, they're voting on sanctuary city policy, staying in the state house. But Mayor Jay, this bail reform push that you released, I read about it, and it's very interesting. I wanted you to illuminate and elaborate. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me, Jack. I appreciate it. Always great to be on with you. So I was at a meeting on Monday with a warming station here in the city. And they had talked to me about how the police had been really diligent about policing out in front of the area and arresting individuals when they had identified that a criminal violation had occurred. But the problem hadn't abated. No matter how many times that individuals had been arrested, the problem continued to grow in this particular spot. So I asked the police to provide me with some data on the last 12 months and year to date. And they were astounding to me, which is why I called the press conference yesterday, because I know, look, Concord has been working really hard on this issue, and I made some good progress in January. And so I wanted to send a message to them that Manchester is ready, willing, and able to help and push this over the finish line, because it's hurting us here in the city a great deal. So the numbers that were given to me were just the year to date. So since January 1, 817 arrests have been made. 37% of that, or 306 of them, were released on bail. But the past 12 months, I think, is the most illuminating to me. In the past 12 months in the city of Manchester, 4,529 arrests were made in the city. Of that, 1,178 of those individuals were out on bail at the time. So that
Can you repeat those, Jay, Mayor?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the last 12 months, 4,529 arrests have been made in the city of Manchester. And of that, 26% of those people, 1,178 times, that person that they was arrested was out on bail at the time of their arrest.
So repeat, kind of repeat offenders getting out and doing it again.
And this is a difficult thing for our police here and for our community. It's the frequent flyers, right? So it's, you know, that there's an arrest, and that the number or the most common crimes that people were rearrested for were for drug possession, felon in possession of a dangerous weapon, simple assault, criminal threatening, a lot of these quality of life offenses that people have concerns with here in the city. So, you know, for me, I mean, that's an overarching concern as it is. But certainly as the weather gets nicer, you know, we're going to have more outdoor activity and people need to feel safe in the city. And so I wanted to get ahead of it. And again, I know the legislature and the governor have been working hard on this issue, but I want to make sure that it's well known that this issue is hurting the city of Manchester, and we want to be a partners in fixing the problem that we have.
What's the process, Mayor, and what obstacles are you running into? What obstacles do you have to overcome so maybe those numbers drop? I mean, 26% or more than 1,000, almost 1,200 of the 4,000 repeat offenders were out on bail for something they were already charged with. What are the obstacles? What's the process?
Yeah, so I think this is where we can work with the legislature to point out some of the challenges that we're having. And I pointed out two yesterday that I think could be undertaken. So eliminating personal recognizance bail, PR bail for people who have been arrested for felonies. There have been two examples just in the last 6 months of where an individual has been charged with shooting another human being and that person's been released on bail. The other part was raising the threshold, increasing the scrutiny on individuals who are who have been arrested, so they're not so that they have to they're required to meet with a judge or they're required to go before a judge before they get released. So a higher level of scrutiny. I mean, I think that those are two steps that we could take. But I know the legislature again has a number of bills that they're working on, and I would love to, you know, we need to find some common ground on this because it's really hurting the city of Manchester.
Yeah, and I wonder, I don't know this because your concern is the state's largest city. I get it. You have your hands full. It's a big enough of a population. But I'm wondering if other communities are not sensing the same thing in smaller numbers. Well, again, it's interesting. The state this morning, Senate President Bradley was on yesterday with me. They're voting on a bill that would basically end sort of sanctuary policies in some communities. But this bail reform thing seems like it's across the board because I'm hearing about it indirectly or directly in other cities and states as a problem.
Yes. I mean, look, if you want to see a transformative impact for the city of Manchester, nothing would have so great a one as fixing the bail reform issues that we have here in the city. And to the point that I would make to other communities who may say, well, you know, this is just a Manchester problem or this is just a city problem. What I would say is that it's in all of our vested interests to have a Manchester that is thriving and banging on all cylinders. And if we continue to have this concern where, you know, we have crime in the city that's repeat ongoing, then that hurts our ability to draw in commerce. And that hurts our ability to be that thriving metropolis that we can be for the state.
Well, it makes sense. Now that you've been on the job a little bit, what's your initial sort of review or what's surprising you? What are you liking? What are the challenges? How's it going in general?
No, so I think things have been going really well. You know, I've been asked this question a number of times, and I think really since I was sworn in on January 2nd, it's been an affirmation of what I've talked about over the last year and a half, that we really do have an incredible city. And that we have an inordinate amount of unbelievable community partners that come into my office every day. We had a town hall a few weeks ago where I got to speak with 50 or 60 people from Ward 1. We're going out to Ward 11 next Wednesday for another town hall. Just being being with the community, working with our community partners, it's just really not a surprise. It's an affirmation of what I've been talking about. We have an incredible city that's really poised to do some amazing things over the next few years.
Well, I appreciate it, Mayor Jay Rouet, Manchester, looking for bail reform in the state's largest city. Big numbers, more than 4,000.
That's just the past 12 months. 4,529 arrests, and of those, 1,178 of those arrests were of individuals who were already out on bail.
Wow. The numbers speak pretty clearly, don't they?
Yes. And that's what we were looking to really highlight yesterday. Really two tracks. One, Manchester wants to be a partner in helping get a compromise over the finish line, and two, just trying to draw attention to what this is or what the lack of action on this has caused for us.
All right. I appreciate it, Mayor Jay Rouet. Manchester, we'll get you back
again soon. Thank you very much.
Good Morning Hampshire, the Pulse of an Age. Jason LaCroix, head of Auto Fair, joining us. Good Morning Hampshire, the Pulse of an Age. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. Are you recruiting me for the state police?
Well, you know what? You actually could probably pass the physical and all the other tests and become a great trooper. And you know, more importantly, you'd look great out there, like in an unmarked, brand new, you know, I don't know, Honda Ridgeline with the state police, you know, credentials. You would look great out there.
I appreciate it. I actually wore my state police hat last night, so I'm on my way.
All right. Hey, listen, you know what? We're not thinking about it because we're getting into the spring and a little rainy, but there's great opportunities. You have good inventory. Wanted to get an automobile update on some options. Great time to trade. Great time to think about spring. What's going on?
Jack, I have 2,455 vehicles in stock, and I haven't had that in many, many, many years. So wow. I need to sell about 1,800 of them this month. And so, yeah, there's definitely some great deals. We have inventory. We have everything. They continue to get dropped off every day. I need to sell cars, and there are great deals. There's great lease programs. Rates have stabilized. I'm seeing customers lower their payments, which is something that we haven't seen in quite a while. So, yeah, this is a really great time.
So touch upon the latter. If you trade or do something, the terms are a little more favorable, so actually the monthly, you're saying, can come down?
Yeah, I'm starting to see that, and it's a trend that we haven't seen in quite a while. You know, now that we have so many cars, you know, my message to my team is let's get aggressive. Let's sell cars. I still want to take in trades, but I want to turn these cars as quickly as possible so I can get the fresh ones going into the summer and this real great selling season.
Now you could mention the locations. You have several brands. You seen any trends still about the same? Anything new?
I'm sorry. Repeat that, Jack.
Are you seeing any trends? Anything new? Are you seeing more of the same? What are people wanting shopping? What are you seeing?
So fuel efficiency is big. We're seeing a lot of activity and a lot of demand on hybrids, which is great. The new technology is unbelievable. If you're driving a 3 or 4 year old car, the technological changes over the last couple of years is really absolutely incredible. From wireless chargers, wireless Apple CarPlay, the cars drive themselves, they stop themselves. Now you put on your blinker, and it tells you that there's a car too close. It's really amazing. The speed control, it senses, it slows down, speeds up automatically. It really is amazing how far we've come over the last couple of years.
Interesting. Again, big inventory, good terms, good deals. And really, it doesn't matter, right, if you are buying or leasing. Do you see a preference with people on that, whether they buy a lease, if it's new, or any thoughts?
You know, I really think you look at what is the better deal, because sometimes there's great lease programs and you should take advantage of it, and sometimes there's great low finance rates, which maybe makes sense. And you know, everyone's a little bit different. How long you plan on keeping your car? How many miles do you typically drive? Are you interested in always having the latest and greatest? The safety and technology, you know, that might be perfect for lease. So really, meet with one of our specialists and just go over what is important to you, and then we can try to help point you in the right direction.
All right. Again, more than 2,000 available now. You again, that's just out for Honda, or is that all lots put together?
Yeah, that's everything. So we have Honda right here in Manchester, as well as Hyundai, Genesis, and Ford. And then we have a Ford store in Haverhill, Mass, along with Subaru. We have Nissan, which you visit often out in Stratham. Subaru down in Tewksbury, and then Volkswagen over in Nashua.
Great stuff. All right, Jason LaCroix, Auto Fair. Great update. Thank you. You look good in the hat, by the way. Now you just need the full uniform. That's all you need. You know, there's auxiliary path, too, Jason. Like, you have all that extra time.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio, national correspondent, joining us with a preview of some of the news of the day or that and more. Good morning, Rory.
Hey, Jack, good morning. And I don't think every point you just made matters one lick, because everyone will tune in for the performance. They want to see if the president is up to the task versus exactly what it's going to lay out. I don't think he'll say anything new, but people want to know if he's up to giving a speech for over an hour before a joint session of Congress.
Yeah, you know, I've seen, and we've seen the flubs, the missteps, the trips, you know, that when he went on touting Bidenomics and went to the Midwest to that brewery, kind of was speaking another language at one point.
Right.
But I think, I may be wrong. Here's my prediction. I want to ask you the same question, Rory. I think if you heard the White House press secretary, they've shut everything down for the last day or so. He's been rehearsing this, working on it, doing nothing else. And I'm not being facetious. Like all of us, like a little bit of a nap or rest, probably resting up, focusing on this, trying to give his best appearance, to your point, appearance. And I think, and I'm not being funny when I say this, I think the walk down from that door when the person at the House, you know, Mr. Speaker, President of the United, you know, right up to the podium. I mean, really, the only difficult thing he has to do is turn around when he gets up there and hand the speeches to the House Speaker and the leaders of the Senate, you know, who are behind him, and then turn. I think the challenge is going to be the teleprompter, because he's been going over this speech. It's a long time. And the people are going to be seeing, is he really relaxed? Is he focused? Or does he have a moment where he kind of gets tripped up in the speech, if you follow me? That's what I think people will be looking for.
Well, a couple of things. I'd say he's been going to that building for 40 years, most of it in the other chamber, but I think he's familiar with the location. We've seen him, you know, walk off stage the wrong way and look to aides to figure out, how do I get off this stage? I don't think that's going to be an issue tonight. When he does walk down that aisle, yes, it's down a slope, but he gets to stop every 6 inches to shake someone's hand. So I don't think we're going to see, you know, what you might otherwise fear of him walking down a long ramp.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right. So, you know, I think this is his home turf. I think this is probably going to be a better performance than many people expect, because he is so familiar with the location and many of the people in the room. At least half that crowd supports him, or just half that crowd in the room supports him. So I think he's going to be feeling pretty buoyed. Now, let's see if there are any people who shout out, interrupt him, try to turn this into Prime Minister's question time with shouts from the crowd. But I think he's going to do better than most people expect.
I tend to agree with you, Rory O'Neill. I think he's going to beat expectations, because they're pretty low. I think the only thing to watch, though, but again, I'm more on that speech side, is it is a teleprompter speech. We know that. And other presidents have thrived at that. Bill Clinton used to be famous or infamous for going off the teleprompter. He was so good, he just ad-libbed, and he'd find his way back. I think former President Obama was pretty good at, you know, mastering that teleprompter, using it well. Very good communicator. George D.W. Bush, you know, gave shorter State of the Unions, was not the most gifted public speaker, and Joe Biden. The problem is, if he has a moment, and because we've seen Mitch McConnell, who now is stepping down as leadership, if he has a moment where he kind of gets distracted or loses his train of thought, or you know, panics a little bit with the teleprompter, That could be, even if it's a split second, that could be a moment. I tend to think he's going to beat expectations. I agree with you.
Yeah, well, he spent the weekend at Camp David getting ready for this. He's spending most of the day prepping for this as well. And I think that, you know, our video feeds, our social media feeds tomorrow are going to be filled with compilations of stutters and stammers and the things he got wrong during the hour and 20 minutes. But, you know, it's also going to be mostly forgotten a week from now.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, is they're doing everything thinking about this, because that's where their job. His handlers, the speechwriter, is probably giving him a backup copy in front of you if you get lost or the teleprompter freezes, because that's even happened. What about
Bill Clinton, the wrong speech came up on the prompter, so he had to ad-lib the first half of it or something, and then it went on for 3 hours.
But he was that good, he could.
Right.
Real quick, what's this I'm hearing about Trump kind of doing a real-time rebuttal?
Yeah, on Truth Social, he'll be posting a real-time fact check as all of this unfolds. He said that he'll be paying particular attention to some of the comments, or if there are any comments about the southern border. So the president encouraging, or the former president encouraging people to join in for what he called a play-by-play of, quote, crooked Joe Biden's State of the Union address.
Good stuff. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Michael Graham, New Hampshire Journal. Quick update. A lot of stuff percolating in the New Hampshire legislature and beyond. New Hampshire Journal, NHJournal.com. Good morning, MG.
Hey, how's it going? Sorry, I was in the middle of a call. I got to pay the bills, you know. So
no, I'm glad. Give us an update.
I got to dump this call. I got Jack Heath waiting, so let's go.
What do you got? What's happening at the State House?
Well, they're going to vote on Sanctuary City legislation in the State Senate. State Senate, all of the members of the Senate, the Republican members, did a joint op-ed that we published at NHJournal.com saying why they think they need to ban communities from becoming sanctuary cities. That is a position that is not embraced by any of the members of the Democrats in the state Senate. All 10 are going to vote against it, including Minority Leader Donna Susie, as she said during an interview on another station this morning. But I'm fascinated by the ability of Cindy Warmington and Joyce Craig, with immigration as the number one topic in the country in every poll, their ability to simply not talk about this. Well, of course, one way they don't talk about it is that they refuse to talk to members of the media who might ask them about it, like New Hampshire Journal. But the issue is not going away, and they're going to have to address it. And then, of course, the other thing is the deluge of attacks and counterattacks on Kelly Ayotte, now that she's endorsed President Trump in November. And boy, she's getting it from both sides. Warmington and Joyce Craig are attacking her, calling her a MAGA Trump Republican. And Chuck Morse, who endorsed Trump and has been an outspoken Trump supporter for months, saying, why should we trust you now? How do we know you're not going to flip and abandon him like you did in 2016? So well, that's a hot issue in the governor's race.
Yeah, I don't think she had a choice.
Voters haven't forgotten how she attacked Donald Trump and divided our party by making a public spectacle of refusing to vote for him, Chuck Morse said in a statement. And the Haley Ayotte people responded by saying, hey, we've endorsed him. Quote, Chuck Morse is a low-energy career politician desperately attempting to launch tired, false, and hypocritical attacks, said Ayotte's spokesperson. Chuck is losing this race by every metric possible. Unfortunately for Chuck, his pathetic campaign is only going to get worse. And, Jack, they sent the meme of the please clap moment from 2016. Do you remember that moment?
Yeah.
Jeb Bush said to the New Hampshire crowd, please clap. Who was sitting right behind him? Who's in the video that the Ayotte campaign sent NH Journal this morning? Chuck Morse.
There you go. It's getting feisty. What was your take earlier at U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen on that she's not going to officially make an endorsement between Cindy Warmington, even though she's a former law partner of her husband, Bill, or Joyce
Craig?
I like
how she nuanced your question. You said Billy Shaheen endorsing. Endorsing is a public statement of support. What everybody knows is that the Democratic race is Team Shaheen behind Warmington and Team Hassan and John Lynch behind Craig. That's what's really going on. She dodged your question by saying truthfully that her husband has not endorsed Warmington. He's just working as hard as he can to help her with the nomination.
Yeah. What
so good on you for presenting that. Here's what I find interesting. You got her to say that she wants to do whatever it takes to stop the flow of illegal immigrants and fentanyl at the border. She said that several times, right, Jack?
Yep.
Have you ever heard her say, therefore, let's build the wall? Against building the wall repeatedly. So I want someone to ask her, are you now for the wall, Senator Shaheen? Are you willing to say you were wrong to kill it when we had a chance to build it, which she did? She helped kill the funding so that vastly restricted what we could do when Donald Trump was president. You can hate Donald Trump and still think the wall made total sense.
Well, yeah.
And unfortunately, we are where we are.
I was a little bit surprised that she said she'd be okay with declaring the two leading Mexican drug cartels terrorist organizations. That's something we haven't heard from the president.
Yeah, and I'm very glad that you post your interviews on the website for the Pulse New Hampshire, Jack, because it gives me a chance to list them again. You know, she gave a very careful answer. And so I want to know, does she think that American might, whether it's drones or troops on the ground or missiles or whatever, going into Mexico to hit cartel hotspots, is she willing to go there, or is she just willing to say we'll restrict their, you know, resources, money, you know, sanctions?
Well, not to sound like one of them, that wouldn't be up to her. If you declare the terrorist organization would be declared by the administration, the tactics would be declared by the administration or the president, because he'd have to approve, you know, any special ops seizing of funds.
But that's what's in play if you go down the declaration of a terrorist organization line. Is she prepared to see America's government treat the cartels like the Houthis?
Yeah. Well, I think that's what you do.
Question.
You're going after their money and you blow up their bad stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And so how far are you willing to go? And so that's, once again, an interesting question.
So the sanctuary city thing is along party lines. Does it pass or just pass the Senate?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. It absolutely passes.
Okay.
It'll get, they'll vote on it before lunch in the House when they still have a slim Republican majority. After lunch, they lose it. All the geezers go home to take naps and watch Matlock. But they'll still have a majority in
Matlock.
The morning.
Matlock.
And
oh,
so
my
at some
goodness.
Point in the future, I know it's your favorite show, Jack.
You pulled that one. So you pulled that future, one out of center field, Matlock. Wow.
But if there's any journalist who is talking to Warmington and Craig, they want to be governor, who doesn't ask, "Do you support sanctuary cities? Yes or no?
Yep.
Will you sign or veto a bill banning them? Yes or no?" You're not doing your job. That's
real quick,
the job.
Lightning round, split second, no time to think, because I know it's you don't make predictions, and I know we don't know. Who's the next president?
No idea.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Tom Raphael, president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental. He never rests. He never catches his breath. He's out there jogging, running, host of his weekly show here, Northeast Delta Dental. And, of course, Stories from the Starting Line, author his latest book. Catch that at Gibson's or Amazon, wherever you want to find it. Good morning, Tom, with some good news a day early.
Good morning. Yes, well, thank you, because I explained to Jay. So tomorrow I'm doing some TV work in Maine, WGME, because Northeast Delta Dental is New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont, as Jay's pointed out. We're doing what's called the Maine Greenlight Media Show, which basically we're evaluating entrepreneurial proposals. So thank you for letting me talk today. I really wanted to mention last night at 7 o'clock, we hosted a leadership thought meeting, and it was on mental health awareness. And so I had the icons in mental health, obviously Chief Justice Broderick, as well as Dr. Will Torrey from New Hampshire. And there are many, many stakeholders, both from the state as well as all the different great organizations that deal with this challenge. And we just had a wonderful free flow of conversation. So I think we're moving the needle in the right direction. And I just wanted to, I know you have a wide audience, and I just want to, I'm sure some of these people are listening. So Scott Spradling was our MC and did a great job. So that was last night. On the fun stuff, Saturday we have the last of the Snow or No We Go series. It's in Franklin, and it's a fundraiser for the New Hampshire 4-H group and runners. Likely, we won't be on snowshoes because it's been raining all day, right, Jack? You just mentioned it.
Yeah.
So the way we designed the series was that if there wasn't enough snow, then people would run. So that's happening on Saturday. And for my veterans friends, I just wanted to remind you to give me a call directly at 603-223-1300. Six or seven major cases a week Dr. Correa is doing, so it's obvious that because of the guideline restrictions, veterans aren't getting their care at either the VA or through Medicaid. So it's a program that my generous board has set up to the tune of $300,000. So it's working, and I just get a lot of delightful, you know, messages from the veterans. They tend to be older gentlemen, but sometimes there are younger folks as well. And then this weekend I have Dr. Christina Schiltz on my show on restorative dentistry, but she is an amazing dentist in the Upper Valley of New Hampshire and has done a lot for children's oral health. And tonight on that topic, I'm actually hosting a dinner right here in Concord called Carried Away. And it's basically, we did $1 million grant to an organization for school-based dental programs throughout all schools in New Hampshire. And surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, Jack, you know, there are many, many school-aged children that haven't been to the dentist. So we're trying to address that. And finally, Stories from the Starting Line is going great. We added an additional chapter. That new chapter is in the books that are at Gibson's that you reference in the bookery and Amazon. And basically, there's a lot of life-altering stories in there, so hopefully people will buy it, and all the funds then go to the Veterans Rural Health Foundation. So that's the scoop, Jack, and I'm sticking with it. How's that?
Why not? You should. It's good. It's solid. It's there. You can leave it. You can stick with it. I appreciate you. Have a busy Friday and a good one. Thank you, Tom, with some good news.
Thank you, Jack, as always. You're the best. See you. Bye.
223-1300 if you're a veteran out there and you need some help or coverage on your oral health surgical bill, which, as you know, can be thousands of dollars. 223-1300. Great. Thank you for that network.